And it is Friday morning here on WWGH Radio. You are tuned into the Pastor Spot, a weekly radio ministry of Community Christian Fellowship. This program can be heard live Friday mornings from 11:10 a.m. until 12 p.m., repeats on Sunday mornings from 8:10 a.m. till 9 a.m., and on Wednesday afternoons from 3:10 until 4 p.m. Now remember, go to the website, WWGH1071.com. Go under Program Archives, and the Pastor Spot is the first show. You can hear every show back to the beginning in the month of March of 2008. Just look for the date. Now, we turn it over to the host of our show, Pastor Steve Whitaker. Pastor, how are you today?
I'm doing great. And by the way, Scott, you know, if we look back to those, you know, all the programs they can listen to, there's about 125 hours of programming. So there's quite a bit there that they can listen to if they would want to stretch
out. Go back and, yeah.
Hey, I am Pastor Steve Whitaker from Community Christian Fellowship in Prospect, Ohio. We are a Bible teaching, Bible believing, and hopefully Bible practicing church most of the time. We all stumble, though, don't we, right?
We do. We do.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. Anyway, we're at 209 East Water, and our services are on Sunday. We have a 9:30 Bible study hour and a 10:30 worship service. And here in a couple of weeks, we're going to start beginning a noon broadcast, right?
Oh, absolutely. On Sundays.
A noon broadcast on Sunday. So we'll be broadcasting Sunday at noon, not this show, but actually the service from the church. So I'm really looking forward to that, too.
Yeah, we should have that going, hopefully, by the end of the month of May.
That'd be wonderful.
Perfect.
Looking forward to that. Well, I've got Frank Robinson with us today. Frank hadn't been around in a while. He was working Fridays for a long time, and now I think he's officially, he keeps retiring and then rehiring, right?
Don't you, Frank?
That's right. But we all do that. We want to stay busy. But Frank's with us, Frank Robinson. Good to have Frank here today. And, of course, Scott, it's good to see you again and be here. I'm enjoying a new studio quite a bit. I mean, it's just something about it seems more homey and comfortable.
You know, it does. We've all kind of adapted over the last month and worked out the sound issues, the acoustic problems, and now it's feeling like the studio.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, feeling like home.
Well, last Sunday we had a wonderful high school graduation service at the church for all of our seniors that we had, and we had a total of eight, and we had six that were able to make it, or seven.
Six of them.
They were able to make it Sunday, and we had a good service. It was a great time, and tried to be encouraging to those kids. And you know, this is when you move forward. Yeah, I have to. It's kind of funny when I look back. When I woke up the morning after my high school graduation, I was scared to death. The days of being taken care of were over, and I knew it. And I was scared to death. Now, what I did with that, I could have done a lot better. For the next few months, but however, within 6 months, I had met my wife and gotten married, and from high school graduation. So when everybody said it won't last a year, I can understand them saying that. But folks, it's soon to be 43, or is it 43? I don't know, somewhere around there. But I'm not a person that pays attention to time. I just enjoy what goes on in it. Anyway, today I'm in Hebrews, and Hebrews chapter 4. Beginning in verse 14, I want to read a passage. It says, "Therefore, we have a great high priest who has gone through the heavens, Jesus Christ, the Son of God. Let us hold firmly to the faith we profess, for we do not have a high priest who is unable to sympathize with our weakness, but we have one who has been tempted in every way, just as we are, yet was without sin. Let us then approach that throne of grace with confidence." In another King James Version, I just picked this up walking out this morning, but in the King James Version this morning, it said, "Let us approach the throne of grace boldly, with confidence, so that we may receive mercy and find grace to help us in our time of need." You know, Jesus was that high priest. Jesus shed his blood for the sin of the world. And because of that door being open, we can not only come boldly to him with anything and everything. A lot of times people don't think that, you know, God doesn't want to hear from them. You know, God doesn't want to hear from me. My problems don't mean anything to him. They do. And or here's another good one. They say, you know, God knows Me, I don't go near a church. You know, I get struck walking in the door. You ever heard that? I've heard people say that one. And they don't understand that God always wants to hear from us. He sent his son, Jesus Christ, for that reason, so that he could pay for that sin. But what's interesting, it says, we don't have a high priest that can't understand and sympathize with our weaknesses. And that was one of the key elements of Christ, Jesus Christ coming to earth, was to understand what we go through each and every day, to live here as a man. If any of you have ever read The Temptations of Christ, you know, when he was, when Satan tested him with it and tempted him, and Jesus overcame it, but he was one without sin. We struggle because our temptations we succumb to too often. But if we understand that we have a God that desires to know us, desires to help us, desires to lift us up, there shouldn't be anything we can't bring to him. Scott, have you ever felt like just giving up at any part of your life?
You know, honestly, no. Now, that's strange.
No, I don't think it's strange.
But for me, right, so far, not to say it wouldn't happen one day, but for me, when something ends, I immediately, within hours, I think, okay, well, what's next?
Mm-hmm.
You know? So it never occurs to me to give up on something.
One thing that, you know, when things get difficult with me, I've always had so many irons and so many fires, I immediately think how that particular thing is going to affect all the rest of them. But then the truth of the matter is, it always comes back down to, do I trust God with the outcome? Is there going to be something new that comes down the road? And God is there to guide us through all that. And I think if we put that faith in him, we can get through so much. It's, you know, you answered that there's really nothing that has felt, made you feel like giving up. And I feel the same way. How about you, Frank?
I can't really think of any occasion where I thought I would give up. In fact, when I've hit those low peaks, the Holy Spirit just lifts me up and gives me strength to move on.
Young people today are not feeling the same way. They're giving up easier. I think that a lot of it is they haven't been battle tested as much with a positive outcome. They've been beat up and battled, but not battle tested. And what I say by that, the level of abuse today has just really gotten bad. And in the effort to change our world so much and to change our country so much, we have left a lot of good things behind. There's things that need change sometimes, but I don't think you throw the baby out with the bathwater, right? And you know where that came from? I think you know, Scott, where that phrase "throw the baby out with the bathwater" came from.
I don't think so.
Really?
No.
Well, I will inform you
yes.
right now. Those kind of trivia things I really like. Up until 60 years ago, especially people in rural areas, you took a bath once a week, and their tub was filled with water. Usually, it's a pump. You know, they pour hot water in the tub. And they would have, dad would take a bath, then mom would take a bath, then the kids would take a bath. And the last one that got washed was the baby. And it was once a week, and people worked hard, and they worked outside. By the time they got to baby, that bath water, especially using lye soap, you couldn't see through it. Mm-hmm. So when you finally get to the baby, they're the last one, you're going to throw the water out. Don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. You can't even see the baby if it were to go under. So that's where that came from. But I think that sometimes we throw the baby out with the bathwater when it comes to changing things in our culture, in our environment. And there's so much good out there that we shouldn't be doing that to. And inadvertently, I think that we have left a lot of our young people without hope. You know, in such an effort to show people that that we don't have a God, that those things are something that we don't depend on, that we only have ourselves. And you can see it in all of the advertising in the last 40, 50 years that, you know, go with gusto, just do it, you can do it, you know, on and on, you. Well, the problem is when you fail, there's nothing left. When you trust in God and you know that God's ultimately in control of everything, you can fail, but you still know that God's in control and God can bring you up from the depths of despair. Well, if we don't have that, then where are we going to go? And if the situation seems hopeless or endless, what are people going to do?
You're correct. I think one problem is the era that we grew up in. We still had plenty of old folks who came through the Depression era. And I don't know how...
And they came through.
They came through it. They came through it with stronger faith. There was a period of time in the Appalachia where I can remember tales of my father's family. They didn't have the money for a doctor. So what else did you have if you had a faith-based bringing up? You had prayer. You had faith. And that's why it's so important to hear the old testimonies.
Mm-hmm.
So people can hear of how Christ or another, somehow a prayer was answered. Somehow the healing came.
And it's funny, Frank, too, with that, you know, doctors today will tell you that have done research that people
absolutely.
Of faith heal more often and quicker than people with no faith. Isn't that interesting? Because even with the fact that we trust God every day, there's something that having faith does in the mind that promotes that.
Oh, absolutely.
And promotes that. Anytime you're going to be positive, you're going to heal quicker. But it's really funny, and you talk about that transition period too. Our generations prior to this generation, and maybe even my generation, part of our generation, the younger part of my generation, all those generations had seen extreme hardship and had seen us come through it. This generation and the one prior, they've seen abuse, they've seen neglect, and all those ugly things, but they haven't seen the major events that we came through the way we always saw. You know, they didn't have the Great Depression. Those times of poverty that we rose up and came out of. But we haven't had that, and this is the first time probably in history. Now, granted, there's families and there's people that don't go out and take advantage of the ability for their children to be okay. But in the United States of America, if you're a child and you're sick, you have access to health care. You have access to food. You have access to education. You have access to clothing. All those basic needs you have access to. Now, a lot of people will say, oh, no, you don't. Oh, yes, you do. I've worked in the field long enough to know that you do. However, what stops that from happening is when people don't take the initiative to make sure it's getting from point A to those children. There's where your breakdown is. I think there's plenty of giving being done in the world. I see it. And in our country especially, we've always been the most giving nation in the world, and we give it everywhere else. But the problem you'll have in a breakdown is, did it get from here to here? And really, in some of the third world countries, it never does get to there. You know, it's being gleaned off the top. But the point is that there were times when I grew up, and when those prior to us grew up, the people truly were starving. One of the things that really strikes me, you know, when they talk about white privilege, I think that they have to understand, we always want to look at everything as a whole. And the truth of the matter, especially in the United States, we got 50 states and some territories. And then within those states, we have regions, and everything's different. And where some place might have had an elitist attitude, some other people were starving to death. And I look at the pictures. I have a site, and I'd encourage you people to go on it. It's just called Appalachian America, and there's some others. And they post pictures from way back till now. You have never seen such poverty, such lack of education, people living in shacks that nobody would want to live in. I mean, by the thousands.
You know that
and
what
people rose up and came out of that.
But you know what I think the difference is? The difference is, and certainly there is a generation still alive today that was alive during the Depression. But after the Depression and the war, World War II, there was extreme wealth in this
country. Absolutely. There's your bingo spot.
They saw great loss, but they also saw great prosperity. This generation now has never seen great prosperity. It's been even flow the entire time.
I agree. The thing is, Scott, though, that great prosperity they saw coming out of World War II. The reason it seemed like great prosperity is because from where they had come from, there was a huge leap.
Right. The thing about it also is that if we saw somebody, you know, even in the 80s, if you saw somebody living in poverty, you heard about it or saw it in a book. Now it's on your phone right now. And you know what? That's why then, you know, if somebody made fun of the way you dressed because you didn't have money, they might have done it in a group of five or six. Now, with one click, your whole school sees it. And that's a very mentally challenging thing.
You know, something my dad did when we were kids, when we get to complaining about what we didn't have, or these kids had this, or these kids have that, and he only had to do it a few times, he would load us up in a car, and he would take us to the most poverty-stricken areas of Columbus, and he'd drive around and say, "Do you really have it that bad?" Mm-hmm. And we'd shut up and never say another word, and we'd go home. And unfortunately, there weren't as many opportunities for a lot of those people. There weren't many, things were more generational. But the kids today actually have more than they had than even in the affluent times after World War II. But it's like you said, it's been such a flat spectrum, a flat tabletop, that they haven't seen the highs and the lows, and they don't see the great, great increase. But I can guarantee you that back in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, kids weren't carrying cell phones. And you didn't just go to the refrigerator and get anything you wanted, and you didn't get allowances that allowed you to buy clothes from the mall. And I mean, we got an allowance when I was a kid. We got 25 cents a week if we did all of our chores. Now, that probably would be about $2.50 today, maybe. It still was nothing. It wasn't anything. But the point was, we were being taught that that's what we needed to do. Today, I mean, farmers, it's kind of funny. They've all gone. You see these great big round bales and square bales out in the field when they're baling, and you don't see many small squares. It's because they can't get anyone to work on the farms and bale the hay anymore. That's something all kids could look forward to back then. Even if they're city kids, there was always a farmer needing help when it was hay baling time. And because of the fact that things have been provided, they don't see the need to do it. Funny story, I was talking to a farmer last month, and he was telling me that they were baling hay, and he'd gone into Prospect to pick some kids up, and he picked up about four or five kids and drove them out to the hay field, which is about it's probably about 4 miles from town. And the kid didn't know what he was in for, and he was a high school kid, but he didn't know what he was in for. And he got out there and he started explaining what they were going to do, and the guy looked at him and said, "I'm not doing this," and he turned around and walked back to town. That was a long walk. Maybe as much work as doing that, and they brought him back. He said, "I'm not doing this." But I don't want to get too much off subject, but I guess what I'm getting at is that we are in difficult times today. I think that we are in more difficult mental and spiritual times than we are physical times. Because even, let me tell you something, if you've got young people that somebody knows they're hungry and they're not getting those resources for them because they are available, that person that's supposed to stand in that gap is having a mental or a spiritual problem to be not taken care of in the first place. And because those things, it's just like we just talked about a few minutes ago. We were talking about, you know, the food coming to the towns from the schools. And, you know, they got all this food that right now the government is giving them, saying, "Take them to the kids." And they get there, and you got five kids show up from the town to pick it up, when there's a whole town full of kids that no one's come out of the house. Are you telling me there aren't little kids that mom and dad or someone who is ever watching them couldn't go get that? I mean, it's there. We just really, we've got to learn to get off square one. And we've got to... One thing we've got to learn to do is start taking some personal responsibility and not feeling like there's no hope. Because it says right here, we understand that it says, "Let us approach the throne of grace boldly so that we may receive mercy and find grace to help us in our time of need." Don't be afraid to come to God and say, "God, here I am. I don't have this. How about this one? God, my mind's a mess and I need to get it right. God, I have a problem with with my drive? Can you help me get it right? God, can you help me look at a positive side of things? Help me get a leg up. Help me to follow the things you've said that will give me a new life. And it's there, and it's there for the offering. And I just wish that more people would understand. I've never seen a time in America in my lifetime where such a broad amount of people seem depressed. And they really do. I mean, for crying out loud, they're staying home and not going back to work when they're called back because they say it's because, you know, they're getting a stimulus on top of their unemployment, which is a huge reason. And the other reason is they've been staying at home so long, they're getting depressed. How many times do people tell someone, man, you need to get up and out of the house and get busy because you're becoming very complacent, lethargic, whatnot. And we go to all these extents to make these things available. Our parks, the money they've spent in our parks and our playgrounds around Marion alone and in Prospect, man, if you don't have anything else to do, get up and get moving. Take those kids, enjoy some outside. Sunday morning, instead of just laying in bed and sleeping half the day away, get up and come to church, meet some people, talk, you know, hear about the positive message of the gospel of Jesus Christ and enjoy that and enjoy those people. Even people that are of faith, the Bible tells them not to forsake the assembling together of ourselves because we need it. We need that people, that person-to-person contact. You can't be a man amongst yourself on your own island because that island's going to get pretty desolate after a while. And, you know, the Lord says, just bring your problems to me. Get up and move. And I think that if we don't begin to get up and start getting up and moving soon, I as a pastor, am seeing way too much depression. And I'm not speaking specifically in our congregation, because as most people know that I'm everywhere. I don't just have this congregation that I meet on Sunday of other believers. I'm out and about everywhere, and I kind of consider everywhere around me that the people that I need to minister to, and that's how I truly feel in my heart. So I get out and about, and I see more than someone would just see by coming to church on a Sunday. And the amount of people that are, they're just staying in the house and not getting out. It's really weird. When this thing just happened, this very beginning of when they shut everyone in and closed everything down, it was such a shock to us. I remember we went from, in 2 weeks' time, we went from the fastest growing economy we'd seen in years. People excited. Nobody could get workers because production was up so much. They couldn't find them. And in 2 weeks' time, everyone's being told they have to stay home. They have to do this. They have to do that. I mean, that was a real time. If you want to see depression, you'd think it hit then. Oh, sure. But that's not when it hit. When that first happened, I remember people were holding doors for people. People were being more kind. People were being more understanding because everybody was in that boat of shock and what are we going to do?
Sure.
But as time went on and people just stayed at home, the churches closed their doors, which we'll have another show on that some week. But so many churches shut their doors and they didn't even attempt to have a service. And people are staying home and they're not going to any of their, you know, that they didn't have kids' sports. They didn't have the ball in the summer. They didn't have the swimming pool. They didn't have on and on it goes. You saw people start not only getting more depressed, but being more nasty to each other.
Oh, absolutely.
And having more attitude.
I see that in my favorite pet peeve. You see it in the grocery store. The way a person handles a shopping cart reflects back to the way they drive their car. And it's, I'm sorry, I ought to write a thesis on that. But they want to get in, have no contact,
and
they want to get out.
Yeah.
And you best get out of the way.
And it's affected us very mentally.
It
truly
has. We're a social creature. We're meant to have relationships. And, you know, as Pastor Steve was saying, come boldly. Because I really believe if you set yourself in a pattern, time pattern of prayer, that I can just envision God sitting up there waiting. Well, you know, it's 12 o'clock and ready to hear praise or needs from Joe Smo, you know.
And the point is, the whole thing of coming boldly, like, you know, here I am, literally. literally, here I am, and I'm pouring what I have on you, and here's the other thing, I'm trusting you to help me with that. And when you do that, you begin to feel that, you know, I'm not so lost. I'm not such in a hole anymore. You know, there's a way up and out of here. If we're already depressed, we're not going to find strength within ourselves. We have to have that strength from somewhere come and pull us up. Because the depression, if you've been depressed so long, you're just feeding on depressions. There's an empty well you're drawing from. And people are getting to that point. I think it's interesting. Our governor, Kasich, I didn't watch it. Someone, I believe he said that if the numbers keep going down like they are, and all this stuff, if everything plays out as it should, he was talking about completely lifting restrictions by, I think, July 1st. I heard that somewhere. Anyone else hear that?
I think there's something to that nature.
Yeah. And I thought about that, and I thought, I wonder, even when restrictions are lifted, how many people are still going to be afraid to go outside? How many people are still going to be masked up in the store? There's going to be a lot, I can promise you.
Sure.
Because I still see people each and every day that are scared to death. When the odds, not only are the odds of getting it down, are down, but because of the advances in different things and you know, treatment, it's becoming less fatal as people get it now. But there are still people that, I kid you not, they're scared to death. You see it in the stores. You see the looks they give you when you're not wearing a mask outside and they think you should be. You know, they give you this look like, you non-caring. Look, you're not going to catch anything out in the wind. You know, I'm not going to walk around and breathe my own stuff I should be exhaling when I can be out in the wind. And it's just, I mean, but my point is, the depression grows deep and people start believing and having fear in things that they should, that the fear should be completely overcome in all kinds of areas of their life. And the problem is, I fear that the more we're dependent on the government and the more, you know, people becoming more, I'm just going to stay at home and take whatever they give me. And it's difficult. They need to be back working. I talked to someone last week that said, I'm not going back to work. When I have to, I will, but right now I'm making more money I've ever made in my life by staying home. And that's sad, because the American spirit is, I'm only going to take it if I need it, but I need to be out there working, right? I remember when I was younger, there was a lot of people, and it still happens today, there's a lot of people that do not take advantage of social programs, even when they need them, because to them, they just can't do that. If they're not going to work and earn it, they don't want it.
You know, it's a weird circle, though, because I think a lot of people who live during this live through September 11th. Mm-hmm. But even if you go back to Kennedy's assassination and traumatic events that happen, you know, everything changes in an instant. We do have these moments. If you look at the days after Kennedy's assassination or 9/11, more people wore lapel pins, they held doors for people, they were nice, they held group prayer sessions on college campuses. And
the churches couldn't fit everyone that was coming to the churches.
Exactly. But then during all those events, much like this one, a little time passes, which is usually about 2 months, and then there's conspiracy theories. This is not real. The government flew those planes into the buildings. The CIA went after Kennedy. Then we get angry with each other, because then it's, he was our, and you didn't like that president, and da 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 da, and the buildings, all those people were dead for no reason, and we do that all the time.
I think that initially, Scott, people wouldn't tolerate people doing that because of the shock and just the general feeling of, we need to come together. That's that American spirit we've always had. But I think what happens as weeks go on is that once people realize that it's not the end, once people realize that, okay, we're going to get through this, once again, they could go back to a point of complacency. And when that happens, then that allows all of the negative to pop back up on top and start fighting again. I really felt, and I've said this for years, that the church really blew a huge opportunity at 9/11, because the churches were full of people and we did not give them enough of the truth and the good news to keep them there. And it just became, oh, good, look at the numbers. Maybe we'll get more money this week. I hate to say that, but that's what a lot of it was. And that's not what you were supposed to be doing. Our churches are hospitals. You know, that's where the sick come, and that's where they're to be treated. And all these people came, but nobody was treating them. So they left the hospital. What's the point in laying in bed in the hospital when you can get walk out the door and lay in the bed somewhere else because no one's treating you anyway?
You know, much like with this pandemic, though, it's an interesting thing because, you know, everything's personal in a way. And I did not know this lady well, but she was a Facebook friend. And in the beginning, she had cancer a few years earlier, and she was probably in her 60s, mid-60s, just about to retire, but had had cancer, and she did have breathing issues, and she was petrified in the beginning of getting this illness, was absolutely as cautious as anybody could be, but she couldn't stay home because she was one of those jobs that was considered essential. She was working in a government office where she had to go, but she was, you know, 6 feet away from people, and she was the masks, and she was all this, and you never really know in the end how you got it, but she got it,
mm-hmm.
and she died,
mm-hmm.
and here we are.
So I say, live as if you're not going to die.
Right. But, you know, when I think back on her, I think, and I think about people I've known in nursing homes who were locked down, couldn't see their families, and are dead today because somebody from the outside brought it in. Had to be one of the workers.
That's the whole thing that didn't make sense of any of the nursing home stuff. The workers were coming and going all the time. And yet they were locked down to their rooms. I talked to a friend of mine recently and this is just what he did and what his opinion was, but it kind of gives you an idea about this. He was asked after his mother passed away in a nursing home. They weren't sure if it was COVID or not. She was already gone. Can we put COVID on the death certificate? And he said, absolutely not. He said, I want you to put the name of your nursing home on the death certificate as cause of death. And they said, what? He goes, you guys killed my mom. You locked her away in a drab room with no contact from family or anyone else, and you depressed her to death. And you know, the point is, whether you want to blame them or not, or the situation around them, or right, whatever you want to blame, don't. The point is, the collateral damage of this with people and the way they were treated throughout it was very detrimental to our society. Now, on the other side of that, excuse me, we helped our services in the park, open air services, when we were shut down. When we came back into the building, we gave people the opportunity to separate and wear masks. We weren't going to beat anyone up, no matter what they did. But the point is, we've stayed in contact. Everybody's tried to be positive. We took meals out to people that were shut in, if they needed them. We took. We worked on being positive and coming to the throne of God,
sure,
boldly, and saying, God, help us through this. So I look at that aspect of what we did, and then I look at our church attendance, I look at our church giving, which none of it suffered through any of this. A lot of churches took stimulus money, you know, they could because they were a small entity, and they could get that, you know, the small business stimulus. And we didn't, never would have in the first place, but the point is, to get it, to take it, would have been dishonest because we weren't struggling. But now I see people that have not fallen into that trap so deeply. And I'll be honest with you, on Sunday morning, I've practically got to get somebody to whistle to shut them up so we can start the service. Because everyone's talking and laughing and sharing and enjoying themselves. I got to yell, somebody go out there in the other room and get Frank and all those guys and drag them in here. Because people are... they've trusted God, and they're trusting God. And we cannot put our faith in what the government's going to dole out to us because it's always going to change. And one of these days, the government isn't going to be... Well, they can't do it now. I mean, we're writing some big, bad checks right now. And the very thing that you and I would be put in jail for, our government's just going in deeper and deeper. And all this helicopter money that's flying around is... I'm not even sure they know where it all goes. And exactly, and it's, hey, it's great to get it. If you don't need it, and you can't turn it down because it gives you the opportunity to maybe pay off some things or put it away and invest, do things like that. But a lot of people do need it. I'm not saying they don't. But the amount of people that are just staying at home and being depressed. This morning they were talking on the news that a lot of these businesses are going to have to really increase wages just to get people to come back. What happens when we start really increasing wages? Inflation. Inflation goes up. And we're already seeing inflation climbing rapidly. And, you know, it's amazing to me how many people do not want to. And in a sense, if you look at it at a humanist standpoint, do we really want to go? You know, if I can sit at home, and I normally brought home $500 a week, but now I can bring home $700 a week because I'm staying at home. Do I want to go back to work unless that $200 a week? You know, beyond what I normally would have made? No, I don't. And see, you can understand that end of it.
Sure.
And here's the employers that are just like. Frank just went out to was going to go out to breakfast with a friend of his this morning. When he got to the place, it was closed. Big sign in the door. We no longer have breakfast hours. Like, you don't have the staff to fill it. And it was a huge business they did. If you don't have the staff, you can't do it. So in looking at all this, I have to say that we have to begin to repair. The repair needs to start. If we're going to have any self-worth, self-value, self-esteem, self-respect, we have to begin to get back on that path of, I need to make a contribution. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I love the fact that God makes a way for all of us to make a contribution if we'll listen to Him and follow the path that He has for us. But we need to get back to that point of knowing that there's a purpose for me out there. And I can promise you, laying at home and just watching CNN or the football channel or whatever all day long and waiting on a check in the mailbox is not giving anyone any strength. They're not going to giving anyone any self-worth or purpose whatsoever. And then when you see that, now you see the domestic violence rise, you see the divorces happen, all these things happening. And it's because we've got to get up and get busy. Just get busy. Kick those kids out the door, tell them to go mow somebody's lawn. Whatever the case may be, there's got to be incentive for people to do it. And sometimes the incentive, if you wait long enough, the incentive is going to be there's nothing left to give you and you're going to starve, so you better get busy. But, you know, coming to God, God is there. I want to share with you guys before I go out the air today that God desires a relationship with you. He really desires that relationship. It's not about what you can do for Him. It's about what He can do for you. And until you recognize that, and you recognize what He's doing for you, you will desire to do for Him. And I mean, what other God in the world? I only believe in one, but I mean, what other God out there in religion desires a daily, close, loving relationship with His people? No, it's all about doing this and doing this and doing this and doing that. And you know, God is there. With hope, if you're willing to step out and reach to Him for that hope. I'm Pastor Steve Whitaker at Community Christian Fellowship at 209 East Water Street in Prospect, Ohio, and I look forward to you guys coming and seeing us. Like I said, we're going to be on air here by the end of the month at noon. Our service will be on air. I can't wait for that to happen, and I encourage you to look into that. We have midweek programs for kids and adults, and we're doing a lot of busy stuff this year. I'm really getting excited about it, and But come see us. If you want to give us a call, we're at 740-494-2222, or we are at prospectccf.com. And Scott, I want you to have a wonderful week, a blessed week. And Frank, you're going to have a good week, I'm pretty sure about it.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Frank's daughter just moved back in the area, and he's thrilled because he's had to travel to see her. And what a blessing that is.
Just a
huge blessing. So also, tomorrow is the dairy at Fulton Creek off 257 south of Prospect. Is the dairy at Fulton Creek is having their farm days, and there's crafts and just all kinds of neat stuff there. Doesn't cost you a dime to go. You buy stuff, you buy it, but some really neat stuff. There's fresh honey and bread and all kinds of things and food and crafts and woodworking and just show up. It's right there on 257 at Fulton Creek, south of Prospect. Actually, a little south of Radnor Road.
Mother's Day Sunday.
Mother's Day is wonderful. One of my favorite days of the year. And I'll have a Mother's Day message that is, we love our moms.
Absolutely.
We love our moms. And happy Mother's Day to all you mothers out there. And even if you are not a mother, you had one.
That's right.
Or you know one out there that could be. So wish them happy Mother's Day. God bless you guys.
And this show, again, will repeat on Sunday morning from 8:10 a.m. That'll be Mother's Day, 8:10 a.m. till 9 a.m. And next Wednesday from 3:10 p.m. until 4 p.m. And live every Friday from 11:10 a.m. until 12 p.m. And again, all archived shows are available on the website at WWGH1071.com. Go to Program Archives. Go down to Pastor Spot. It's the first show there. And you can go back to March of 2018 and listen to every show. They are all archived and all dated right there. And remember, you can always listen to us if you're outside the listening area by downloading the free TuneIn app and searching WWGH. Stay tuned. More programming right around the corner.
You're listening to WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, LP, Marion, Ohio. The Talking Place. For people like legendary comedian Shecky Green telling the funniest talk show story of all time about guest starring on Fantasy Island.
I was late.
Yes.
And as I always am for everything I do. And they were waiting for me. And he came up to me. He said, I meant to tell you something. Did you know you made us wait? And I said, well, I'm very sorry, and I didn't realize my call was for later and everything. Then I sat down, and his wife came up to me, and she said to me, Shecky, I'm everybody's wife, and they had just gotten married, by the way. And she said, beautiful girl. And she said to me, would you like a cup of coffee? I said, I would love it, thank you. And he says, listen, I went to tell you, don't talk to my wife, that's my wife. You understand? I don't want you to talk to my wife again. That's my wife. And I'm going to kill you. So I says, he's going to do what to me?
Oh, man.
And then Ricardo says, I want to tell you, Shecky, with another accent, I want to tell you, don't